With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
Who wants to learn more about Lori Vallow Daybell? If you're raising your hand, well, you found the right place. Because on this segment, we're going to be talking about an interview that was recently given by Braxton Southwick, a close cousin to Lori Vallow Daybell. She recently shared significant light on the dark undertones of Lori's apocalyptic beliefs, raising further questions about the extent of Chad Daybell's influence on Lori, especially in those months preceding the death of her children. So let's hear this perspective of what someone had seen up close and personal out of Lori. Southwick, who spent much of his early life within close proximity to Lori's family, reminisced about their intertwined childhoods, stating, "Growing up with an hour of Lori, Adam, her brother, and I were close as cousins could be. Their bond, while always strong, was solidified post-2011 following the tragic 9/11 terrorist attack," Southwick detailed. "My prepper inclinations intensified, and Lori seemed to mirror my passion. We excitedly exchanged notes on survival strategies, recommending books, and sharing new insights. Our mutual interest created a sort of feedback loop that just kept amplifying. Braxton's dedication to prepping wasn't just a fleeting interest. He lent his expertise to two seasons of National Geographic's renowned show Doomsday Preppers and has frequently been a sought-after voice in various television programs and conferences nationwide, elaborating on end-of-times preparation. While Lori wasn't exactly keen on accumulating tangible prepping resources like food and storage due to her frequent moves, Southwick recalled, she took a deep dive into the realm of spiritual and religious preparation. Southwick painted a vivid picture of his 2017 trip to Hawaii, where he and his wife stayed with Lori and her then-husband, Charles Vallow. Our discussions predominantly revolved around prepping, books, our personal emotions, thoughts. It was exhilarating, Southwick recalled. For Lori, this wasn't just a hobby, it was a way of life she deeply yearned to delve into. Lori's zeal for prepping and the end times took a sharp turn when she chanced upon Visions of Glory, a book narrating a man's near-death experiences and his apocalyptic visions. This book, which depicted catastrophes like plagues, floods, earthquakes, and the heralding of 144,000 righteous souls before the second coming of Jesus Christ, deeply resonated with her. Southwick admitted the book was certainly compelling, but Lori interpreted it with extreme fervor. "We frequently discussed its context, and regrettably, I was the one who first introduced it to her." Casting a, yeah. How is that like one where you're like, maybe be a little more careful about the books you recommend to friends? Because
yikes,
look what could happen. Casting a shadow on Lori's obsession with the book, Kauai police in January of 2020 found her lounging beside a pool in the infamous Visions of Glory, perched on her chair with Chad Daybell by her side. Southwick's first encounter with Chad Daybell was in 2018 at a religious conference in Rexburg. Although he was aware of Chad's vocation as a book publisher, their real conversation only commenced in March of 2020. "Chad reached out to me, seeking financial assistance for Lori's bail," Southwick narrated. "I grappled with the situation. My initial instinct was to help Lori, but then risking my house for her bail? The stakes were too high. The conversations with Chad were unsettling. His demeanor was eerily calm. Something felt amiss." The discovery of Lori's children, J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan's body on Chad's property jolted Southwick. I'd initially assumed Lori was protecting her children by hiding them. But the gruesome reality was far from what I'd ever imagined, he confessed. Lori's subsequent arrest led to convictions of conspiracy to commit murder, first-degree murder of her children, and additionally charges relating to Chad's former wife, Tammy Daybell. It was utterly staggering. Lori was always an exemplary mother. Her transformation was beyond comprehension, and Chad played a pivotal role in that drastic change, asserted Southwick. He speculated on Lori's distorted perceptions. She possibly believed her children were better off dead than facing the impending doomsday, and Chad likely manipulated her, asserting the second coming's imminence. Braxton also touched on the volatile mix of Chad's prophecies and Lori's admiration for him, saying Chad was basking in the admiration from a beautiful woman, which likely egged him on to keep up his prophetic pretense. Lori, drawn to the power he seemingly wielded, clung to his every word. Even after Lori's arrest and the chilling revelation, Southwick's affection for his cousin remains, saying, "She's a wonderful person. The path she's taken devastates me daily. My heart aches for her, and I continue to hold her in my prayers," he revealed, his voice thick with emotion. It's a chilling narrative that really paints another piece of the picture here in the trial, or in the trials, if you will, of Lori Vallow Daybell, which there actually will be likely more physical courtroom trials down the road. So we have that to look forward to as well.
So going back to, let's see, that these two kind of bonded, these two cousins bonded after 9/11 in 2001. Something struck me as you read that, because I know during the terrorist attacks, some listeners may not have been alive then, you know, because it was 22 years ago.
We were alive, so, and got to share that morning of magic together.
It was awful. And one of the things that we did as a society was we were kind of doomsday preppers ourselves. A lot of people were thinking this was the end of times and what would we do? Mm-hmm. And a lot of us did go out and we got our bottled water and we got our canned goods and we kind of made a plan, but we didn't go as far as these two.
No.
You know?
What I remember initially also about 9/11 was so many people had just gotten rid of like their Y2K shit because nothing happened.
Right.
And they're like, oh crap, now I need that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up in the city that I'm in currently, because I was in Duluth, Minnesota, which is a very cold place. Mm-hmm. And Y2K was coming. And I thought, well, if the power grid goes down, that's the last place I want to be. So I went south by about 4 hours, which is still cold.
I ended up.
I know. It wasn't real smart. I should have been in Florida.
It's still about the same temperature in winter from Duluth to where you're at. Maybe Lake Effect.
I wasn't very bright. But that was my rationale for wanting to get out of there, because with the wind coming up off the lake, it was extremely cold. It's a little bit warmer where I am now compared to Duluth. But yeah, I just wanted to get out of that area. And then when 9/11 hit, there was just this shattering of the American dream. Like, things could end. We could all be in trouble. So I think we did kind of do that doomsday prepping. And I suppose if you are a very insecure person, like Lori, you might cling a little harder to those things. And I think that, you know, that could have pushed her over the edge. Mm-hmm. You know, some of us could have been pushed as well, but we finally kind of came back into the realm of, okay, we're going to be okay. Yeah. It's okay to think about what would you do if, but we never really built those bomb shelters. And, you know, we finally got rid of our, you know, stockpiles of food and things like that. And we went about our lives. Somebody like her, she did not.
No, she did not. And I mean, it would be, obviously, this is all just utterly insane. And what a horrible, horrible tragedy all this was. It would have been, I guess, almost somewhat interesting, because obviously she was arrested towards the beginning of COVID. But I wonder how that would have went down had she not been, in custody, and all this wouldn't have already have taken place. Yeah. Obviously, shit went to hell far before all of that with the murder of her children. But I don't know, how far would she have gone? You know, how far would that paranoia have taken her beyond what she did with her kids had they not finally caught up to her and figured out what was going on? Because that
interesting to think about.
I mean, talk about that being a dramatically triggering event. I mean, people that, you know, we think about people prepping for Y2K and people that would prep right after 9/11. COVID was the thing that you saw people who never even remotely thought of doing something like that started doing. And it was, I think, the most tangibly, possibly real during those months. It makes you wonder, again, like what, where would this have gone had they been free to do whatever they wanted to as their crazy train kept going down the tracks?
Yeah, I mean, during COVID, I stocked up. We had like 40 pounds of rice and, you know, basic things like if we couldn't leave the house, could we survive? Yeah. And, you know, I bought the staples, rice, water, had basic medicine, that kind of thing, had all the cat food I needed. I mean, I was ready to go. We were not, we didn't have to leave the house for weeks, maybe months if we didn't have to.
Oh, yeah. We did the same thing. I had tons of stuff and literally did not have to go to the grocery store for damn near a year. Other than when I went and got fresh ingredients, because it was like a pantry. I mean, it was like a commercial pantry of like, oh, hey, there's our stockpile of spaghetti. There's this or that. And it was all stuff that I was going to use anyway. Went through it. I mean, I still have a few things. When I moved recently, at the beginning of this year is when I kind of got through some stuff. It's like, okay, this rice is not the greatest anymore. And that's when I really got to kind of dump a bunch of stuff out that had passed expiration. But yeah, I mean, it was a real possibility. And, you know, and in reality, we were pretty much stuck at home for months on end and didn't really go out. So it came into play. But
so I can get behind the whole prepping concept, but I do think at some point you have to step back and go, okay, we don't need to do this. It's good to have a plan, but we don't need to do it. And that's where she goes off to another side and is, you know, watching the crazy train come down the tracks.
There's a big difference between being proactive and being paranoid.
Exactly.
And that's where I think there's a huge differential with Lori versus others and many others too. So that's the latest from the cousin. We'll of course keep watching this. Chad's trial is set for next year. And we'll all keep our eyes on all of this and bring it all to you as it happens.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.